Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Aaron Newcomb and Simon Phipps, episode 184, recorded on September 28th, 2011. Eucalyptus. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, Android device, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. All right, welcome to this edition of Floss Weekly, and today we're going to be talking about an interesting project, but before we get into those details, I want to bring on my co-host, Simon Phipps. Simon, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well here, thank you. I'm in Southampton, where we've unexpectedly had summer show up, and it's been almost warm here. It's quite remarkable.
An Indian summer, which is always nice.
Yes, yes.
That's great.
So I'm very interested to be talking about eucalyptus today. I'm going to be, I've been watching them developing and that research project coming out of the university. I'm going to be pretty interested to understand how they're doing their community development and how they're running the governance for that community, because cloud's going to be so important for open source. And eucalyptus is one of the few things we have.
Right. And cloud itself, I mean, is so big these days with everyone using Amazon or other services. And I know in the private sector, companies rolling out their own clouds or cloud infrastructures within their organizations is becoming more and more popular. And you see this, I mean, almost every big company, IBM and even Oracle, where I work, the messaging more and more these days is all around cloud. So I think, just having an alternative to some of the to Amazon and some of the other services is a great step forward, just having something that you can roll out on your own that maybe doesn't come from one of these big providers where you have to spend a lot of money with them. So, yeah, I think this is going to be really interesting. It'll be great to see what they have to say about the open source model that they're using, as well as the functionality and how it compares to Amazon. I think it's going to be really, really great.
Yep. Well, I mean, cloud is going to be a big deal for the place where I'm working now, ForgeRock, where we're doing open source identity software. And we've already got customers who want to use it on Eucalyptus to manage what's going on inside their cloud activities. So I'm already seeing a great high profile for Eucalyptus. Going to be great to hear what they've got to say about it.
Yeah. And it's nice to talk to you again. Well, I should say that we used to work at Sun together. So we were both Sun employees back in the day. And so it's good to see. I haven't seen you since actually those days. We haven't co-hosted a show together or anything. So it's really great to have you on and talk with you again.
It's one big family. You know, I'm always amazed by where the diaspora of Sun employees has got to, starting startup businesses, getting involved in key technologies and standards. I was delighted to see James Gosling getting involved with a startup working on sensors that float on the ocean and self-navigate and self-power. I mean, who would have thought a couple of years ago that we would be spread so widely and doing so many interesting things?
Right. Well, it's great to see you again. But we're going to bring on our guest here in just a minute to talk about Eucalyptus. But before we do, we need to talk about Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, which means it saves you time, money, and hassle. There are several easy ways to instantly access streaming movies and TVs with Netflix. Number one, you can watch Netflix movies and TV shows on your computer. So you can use your Mac, your PC, take a look at the website, and just stream directly from the website. You can also watch on iPhone and Android phones as well. If you have a gaming console like an Xbox 360, a PS3, Nintendo Wii, which is one of the ways I access Netflix, you can just check out right from there. If you're not a gamer, you can also watch Netflix on your TV with with an Apple TV or a Roku box is a great way to do it. They're inexpensive, easy to use. You can watch movies and TV shows instantly using any of those devices, and you can begin watching a movie or show on one device and finish on the next one, which is great if you have a lot of kids like I do. You get interrupted a lot, and you're watching something. They come up, hey, Daddy. Well, you can pause it, and then later on in the evening after they go to bed, you can pick it up from another device. Whichever way you want to choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies and TV shows as you want anytime, and you can cancel anytime. You're not locked in for a year. You can just cancel that monthly subscription anytime you want. So if you want to try out Netflix for 30 days free of charge, go to netflix.com/twit and be sure to use that URL, netflix.com/twit, when you sign up. And we thank Netflix for their support of Twit and Floss Weekly, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly on Netflix. All right, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. So we're now joined by Graziano Obertelli. Am I saying that right, Graziano?
That's very good, actually. Do you speak Italian?
No, not at all.
You may start. You're pretty good.
maybe I'll take it up. I don't know. But thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right. So let's start out at the very top. So what is eucalyptus? What's the general description that you give to people when they're like, eucalyptus? Is that talking about plants or something else?
Exactly. Is a plant that you can get oils out of it? No, wait a minute. I got it wrong.
this week in vegetation.
So, no, eucalyptus is basically what eucalyptus is, enables the on-premise cloud for all our users. So what does that mean? Everybody probably is familiar with cloud computing, but the term is so kind of not used, but it's very hypered up, and cloud computing is very generic. So it's nice to go to the basic and understand what cloud computing, how we divided up cloud computing, and it's just been around for quite a bit. There is the level of infrastructure as a service that you can see as the very basic, and on top of it, you have the platform as a service, and on top of it, you have the software as a service. And the best example of the three are basically Amazon, EC2, AWS, is basically the infrastructure as a service. The platform as a service can be like Hadoop, is a very good example. And the software as a service can be Salesforce, for example. Mm-hmm. That's the typical. So all of this to say that what Eucalyptus does, provide all its user to create a private cloud, also a cloud or something that looks like a cloud within your own infrastructure, and it will behave like an infrastructure as a service. It's a pretty long-winded way, but
right. So it's a cloud computing platform, and it's similar to Amazon, but you actually go one step further. I think is if I'm understanding correctly. In other words, you're not just providing the back-end infrastructure. You're actually providing and you're not going as far as providing an application that's hosted in the cloud, but you're allowing people to host their applications if they set up Eucalyptus, correct?
That's exactly correct. So what the infrastructure as a service does to you, it basically allows you to get the resources on demand, basically. So think about what people can has to do now when they want to deploy a new application or a new project. They want to say, I need 10 machines, I need this network, and then in about a couple of months, they may have it set up and they get going. Right now, instead, they can just simply run a command that is, you can run instances. I want 10 instances of this kind of operating systems, and there you go. And you have it.
Right. Now my top boss, Larry Ellison at Oracle, he made some comments about cloud computing. And so I'm kind of curious to know, basically one of the things he said a few years ago is that cloud computing is not new. It's basically grid computing, and it's been around forever. So I'm kind of curious what your take is on that. Did Eucalyptus start as cloud as a target, or did it start more as grid computing and then kind of morph into, hey, what we're really doing is we're enabling private clouds?
That's correct. So what the connection here is that Eucalyptus, the people that started Eucalyptus, actually, they all come from the university, from the University of California, Santa Barbara, basically. We're local. And the way they started, Rich Wolski, basically our fearless leader, has a, 15, 20 years experience in a distributed system and grid computing. And being in various national scale projects, VGrads is basically one of the latest one that we worked on. And what happened over there is that we've been involved with GRID from the onset of what grid computing was, at least from the academic perspective. And we discover, basically, after many years working with it, that the idea of the to make it a step further, you really need to migrate this idea to the cloud. And there are some fundamental differences between them. So just to get to your question right away, Eucalyptus started as a cloud computing project, and for a reason, because the grid and cloud, they have... As a goal, if you will, they may be very similar, but the implementation and the structure of the two are very different. And so we started Eucalyptus as a cloud computing project.
And how would you categorize the difference? Is it that cloud computing is more service oriented as opposed to grid computing, which is more purposeful and more with a certain task in mind, especially like you mentioned with academic circles? Obviously, you know, there's a certain research project or something, and they, you know, load all this software on all the nodes and run their queries and so forth. I mean, is that the difference? Is that it's more of a service focused? In other words, you take this platform and use it as you will, as opposed to being more geared towards specific, kind of a query engine.
I think you had some of the points of difference. The grid was very perfectly built for taking advantage, in some sense, of the hardware that you're deploying on. So, for example, a lot of the care that the grid wanted to go to is to expose some of the specifically purposeful machine or equipment that you have on the grid. For example, the good example was the microscope. If you have a microscope, you want to access it, but the API or the way to access the microscope is completely different than to run a VM. So in some sense, the grid was really targeted to this very big project scale and this idea about having a federated cluster of resources, federated grids that create this huge grid. On the other token, the cloud computing idea really is very much service oriented. Is very much leveraged this idea about having the resources available to you as is the electricity. So at this point, you don't care where you plug your socket in; they all become give you the same level of energy into it. And the VMs basically allow you to do that. So what cloud computing does, provide you the same level of images everywhere you are. It basically hides the differences. There are differences, and if somebody's very good, they can figure it out, but that's the general idea. If I create an image for, say, Amazon, I can run it in Eucalyptus. I can run it in just about any other cloud computing platform I can see.
Right. Since you mentioned Amazon, what are the differences? You mentioned that one is obviously infrastructure as a service versus platform as a service, but how would I use these differently? I guess we talked about public versus private clouds, and you're focused more on private. But if I was a user looking to choose between Amazon and maybe rolling out my own cloud and using Eucalyptus, what are the differences that I would have to consider?
Yeah, so hopefully not that much. Eucalyptus, you said it right. So Eucalyptus and Amazon EC2 AWS, they both are infrastructure as a service. So at the end of the day, they both provide the same level of services. All the resources are just about the same. So for a user perspective, there should not be, from a cloud user perspective, there should be very little to no difference in between using Eucalyptus or Amazon. What the difference really are is the fact that in one case, you're using Amazon machines. So they're on the public cloud, you pay them as you go, and that's basically what it is. And in the other case, you use your own machine, your data center machine, and they provide you the same API. The reason to do that is multiple. For example, the typical use cases right now is a dev test. If you want to do develop an application, you want to spin up and down multiple instances, you may want to do it on your private cloud and then move it over to the public cloud. The final goal I think that everybody is looking for is this idea about hybrid cloud. And the hybrid cloud is the idea for which you start internally into your own cloud, and you start developing whatever is your application. Let's say a game, for example. You start a game and you have a few instances that serve that game. The game becomes very wildly popular and suddenly you have to expand. And you ended up using all your resources. At this point, what you can do, you can migrate the extra capacity that you don't have to the public cloud, to say Amazon, for example. And at that point, you can expand even more and keep servicing your user. And this can be done in a matter of minutes instead of months.
Right, right. And I'm assuming also that there's a matter of security here, too. Some companies, obviously, internal applications and things like that that they're developing, they want to keep those within their own walled garden, so to speak. So, you're not going to deploy on Amazon if you're deploying an internal application for employee use, probably.
That's correct. The data is really the important part of all the computing. If you think about it, I mean, now that we have this idea of virtualization where the compute is the same everywhere you go, your data is really the king here. And the requirement that every organization has on their data is very, very important. For example, we have European has very strict privacy rule that prevents people from moving certain kind of data around, basically.
Right. Now, one more question that I had is, what else can we compare this to? I mean, most everyone probably that's watching this podcast is familiar with Amazon. And then we have Eucalyptus now. Who else do you compete against? Who are the other, what are the other platforms that people might be familiar with?
So, a lot of people that come to us, they talk, for example, about VMware. And they talk about, for example, OpenStack. Those are, I guess, two. And we heard a bit about cloud.com and Nebula. Anyway, so there are slight differences on all of them, of course. So for example, VMware, they're really good in the virtualization. Their advisor is, of course, king of the hill, you'll say, in the enterprise level. I think they're still a bit new on the cloud space. They don't really have the comparison. I think we sit on top of VMware. That's what I would say, because we can use their app advisor within Eucalyptus. And the other projects, you can go and check, I guess, that the open source project more that people wanted to pit us against, I think, is OpenStack. OpenStack is kind of a very young project. It's very promising. At the moment, it's targeted very much toward ISP and this very, very big installations. As you can see, there are big company behind it at the moment.
Oh, hello. So, hi, Graziano. Great to listen to all this, all these details. I wonder if I can dig into some of the community aspects about Eucalyptus. I'm very interested. You know, you've made a big splash with Eucalyptus as a way of bringing cloud applications in-house. What is your community like for the open version of Eucalyptus? What's the structure? What is the license? Could you give me an instant summary of the key facts?
Absolutely. So we have a very interesting community and very vibrant. So first of all, let me start at Eucalyptus, that's why we're here speaking, as a GPL license, GPL version 3 license, and it's been there since the company started. At the time of the university, it was released as a BSD license. And so since then, we've been open. At the moment, Eucalyptus is hosted in launchpad.net, so you can see it. If you let me know if you want to talk about the code, I can go and dig about the code and the new releases and such. But to go back to straight to your question about the community is a very good question. And what we learn is that, and that's why we come up with this idea about the cloud IT roles. It's this idea for which people that approach cloud computing is not a single application in some sense, but is a different way in which one would structure the work. And as such, there are roles associated with it. And we come up with terms to understand internally first, but then to try to speak with other people about what the different level of engagement with the eucalyptus and with the cloud computing platform. So let me give you a couple of them. We have the cloud administrator is the person that basically stand up the infrastructure for the cloud, the software, eucalyptus, is the person that would install eucalyptus, keep it running smoothly, and keep sure that it's top-notch. Then we will have the cloud application architect. This role is the person that will create the images for end user to use. Let's say once you have the eucalyptus installed, you need an image, an operating system to run on, and on top of it, you need to install the application. The cloud application architect is the person that makes sure that the application running within the instance perform well and is fully ported to the cloud, if you will. And then if you go up, you have the cloud architect is the person that in some sense oversee this this idea about when to use the cloud within the infrastructure, how to deploy, how much resources to allocate to it. So, and then finally we have the cloud developer. That's probably the one that you typically think about as community is the person is the role that will say that. The people that really develop the software that comprehend eucalyptus and whatever sits on eucalyptus in this case. The reason why I divided up in a different level is because we have a lot of interest when people start deploying it. We have a lot of interest in from cloud administrator, of course. They want to understand how to deploy, how to relate with the virtualization, different operating system. And because of is a full, as you can see, infrastructure as a service will kind of take over all your machines, we touches a lot of moving parts. And the fact that we are portable between a lot of different operating systems means that we have peculiar problems depending on the specific operating system. So the questions here are endless. The customization, again, is the same. How can you make it faster? How can you make it better? How can you make it better integrated? And so we have a lot of interaction with the cloud administrator because they keep getting going. They have good ideas. They want to modify. And we got a lot of feedback at that level. Another level that we have. So, sorry, go ahead.
So just to dig in here a second, from the sound of it, you're telling me that Eucalyptus is not co-developed by anyone other than your company. Your community are all end users or deployer developers rather than people who co-develop Eucalyptus with you. Is that true?
I would say that our community is mainly skewed toward administrator and cloud application architect at the time. We had very few key contributions from community and from people using it. Right now, we actually would say to people to perhaps wait until the next release because the next release will change the development process. So at this point, we actually, if you want to get acquainted with the code, please do, but patches against the old code that are too invasive will not be reviewed until the new code is out. And
you don't want any code developers. You're very happy with having an open source community where you're the sole developer and it's all end users in the sense of, as far as that goes for something like Eucalyptus, where your end users are all highly technical developer and administrator staff.
Yeah, actually, it's not so. I mean, we would really like to have developer. What I'm trying to say is that by now, because of the software and the mechanism to work, I don't want to waste anybody's time. So I want to be sure that we understand that the patches that are submitted now, they will have a longer delay for us to review because we have the new code out. And what I'm trying to say is that and naturally, because of perhaps the novelty of the cloud, the cloud computing, the private cloud computing, I would say that we have a lot of more interested, and we were kind of surprised because we were expecting a lot more developer at the beginning, but we got a lot more administrator and application architect engaged with us. And I think it's because of it's a new tool and people really has to understand how to use it before understanding where to expand it.
So when you say at the beginning, is that at the point at which you switch the license over from BSD to GPL v3? Is that the beginning you're referring to? Are you referring to earlier than that?
Oh, very early on. We did it, 2.5 years ago. Is that right?
I think right. So, so yeah. you're saying You're saying that there's really never been any interest in collaborating on the code. It's always been purely a project that you and your colleagues have worked on, and there's really never been any co-development community around it.
No, we have patches. The development process currently is not done with the typical governance that you would expect from a typical open source community supported project. We have core developers that are within Eucalyptus, and they keep the code up and running, and they accept patches, they review it, they integrate it. But we don't have the fully governance model for which all the communities engage at this point.
Right.
We may change if we have requests for that, but.
So, what was the reason why you switched the license from BSD to GPLv3? Why did you make that decision?
At the time, it was when the project came out from the university, and we had a lot of pressure from our community to move to GPL, and so we did.
So that was from the end users were asking for the software to move over to GPLv3, because you told me you don't have any other code developers.
Actually, developers. There were a couple of developers that said, well, we really like Eucalyptus to stay free, and the best way to guarantee that is to have GPL, so you should have GPL, and so we'll listen to it.
Right. So, and how are you running things now? Do you have a contributor agreement that developers would need to sign if they wanted to contribute patches into the code?
We do. We have a CLA that is actually on our website and open. If you go and take a look, there is a developer corner, and we have all the instruction how the code is, we call the life cycle of a patch. So you say, you know, let's say that you want to contribute a patch. How do you do it? How do you get involved? And the CLA is part of it. We know that there are problems for some people for the CLA. So if is that the case, we're open to talk and have a different agreement on that. So we're fairly flexible at this point.
Right. But in terms of community governance, it sounds like you're really pretty clear about the idea that the Eucalyptus, the company, is in control here, and really people contributing patches are doing so from a position of being end users or clients rather than from being peers with equal control.
At this point, I would say yes. At this point, Eucalyptus is in charge of the technical direction. We've been very good about listening to our community and to move the direction, prioritize the goal depending on what the community asks. For example, the new upcoming release, our community asked for HA very, very vocally, and that's what we did. We did HA boot from EBS, and they're all featured that have been highly requested by our community. But yeah, right now I would say that there is just. You know, we'll say is instead of having the it's the usual cathedral versus bazaar kind of model of governance, and we have a fairly control structure at the point.
So a cathedral. So I'm quite interested. You said there that you do listen to your community and you're very responsive to their needs. Now, when OpenStack started, the folks at NASA were saying that one of their key reasons for joining in with OpenStack was because that wasn't the case. Do you want to tell me what really happened?
Oh, my goodness. This has been blogged a lot. And I think that Martin Mikos, our CEO, really explicitly said it in a very well blog. I will look for you and whatever. But the thing is that it was... It was a mismatch, I think, of communication, because we did the set patches. I think that what happened there is that more than NASA, would say Chris Kemp and his peers preferred to or wanted to have a certain direction in where Eucalyptus would be going, and at that point it was not really compatible, because that would have broken the AWS API. So at this point, instead of building yet another cloud API against which, you know, to form a community, we decided that we prefer to first of all build a tool and build a community around an API that is a de facto standard and move forward from there.
Right.
that's what I would say is really happened. Everything else is really a lot of media resonation. I mean, as far as I know, the government, NASA, still uses eucalyptus internally. So, you know.
Right. So this is really the working out of that governance strategy that you've got there of having eucalyptus, the company, as the lead here. And this was really NASA wanting to steer in a direction you didn't want to go. That was so this is all a natural consequence of that governance, you'd say.
Yeah, perhaps. I haven't thought about it that way. Maybe you're right. Maybe they wanted to be in control of the development, and that's why they ended up creating Nova, I think.
Right.
Maybe, yeah.
Right. So I noticed that you said there that it was a de facto standard you were working with. So the thought that I keep on having here is the problem with de facto standards is they're often somebody else's proprietary technology that you are working with. Do you have any concerns going forward? You know, the world patent war one has broken out between Samsung and Apple. Do you have any concerns that you will draw fire from serious patent holders in the cloud space, such as Amazon, or indeed such as Oracle or IBM? Do you have concerns about that, or do you think that eucalyptus is in a strong position to protect itself, its customers, and its community?
Oh, goodness. I'm afraid I may need a law degree here for answering that question. Personally, I think we are very much safe. We are coding against an API that is published, that is well-developed, and is actually well-defined because Amazon uses WSDLs at web services. So at this point, the interface is, as far as I can tell, is public available and public domain. It would be, I think, hard time to complain about that. We develop eucalyptus in a clean room, so we just worked off looking at those WSDLs. So in that sense, I'm pretty comfortable about being, in that sense, very good. And everything else has been engineered by scratch by our great, you know, engineers. So
you just need to make sure that that Oracle doesn't win its case against Google there, being able to prove that APIs are copyrightable.
I'll leave bigger people to get into that discussion. What I would say is that in that battle, which shims about over the control of Java, it seems a bit different in the sense that here the service, if you think about it, if you will, the way that Amazon, AWS, that's what we're talking about here, give is really the API to their services. So it's really designed to be publicly accessible by everybody. Closing that up seems a bit kind of against the ecosystem they're building and we are building. It seems very counterintuitive, first, as on a normal sense. And in general, I don't know. I don't think you can really, you know, get a case here. But
I don't want to go too far into the legal ramifications here. But I'm just curious. I mean, has Amazon ever advertised their API as an open API? I'm not sure.
It is actually on their documentation. If you go and take a look, the WSDL are published. You can collect them because of the way that web services work. So. It doesn't happen more open than that, I would say, right? It's just right there, and you can get them. The WSDL is basically standard. It's a description language for the web services, so you can get them and take a look at them.
Yeah. Well, we could go down that path a little bit more, but before we run out of time, I do want to get a few more details in terms of implementation. How do you actually, as a user, and this is where since I'm kind of on the ground here with technology, how would you actually go about implementing this if you wanted to run your own private cloud with eucalyptus? How do you actually get started? Is it just installing an image on a server? Is it that simple, or how do you get started?
So because of this difference in the multiple roles engaged with eucalyptus, the first thing I would say is that it depends what you're looking for. If you're looking to be like a cloud user and for example, test what eucalyptus can do and how good is their, for example, our API, for example, against the AWS, you can use our community cloud. It's basically a Eucalyptus system that we stood up for our community to test it. So they can upload their images, they can start them, they can test the how a cloud would feel as a cloud user. If instead you want to download it and test it and basically be a cloud administrator, we have what is called Fast Start. It's Eucalyptus Fast Start. That would be probably the easiest path to get you started. You download our package. It's basically a USB stick. You can put it on a USB stick. And you get two machines with their own connected via network. And we have a video. In about 20 minutes, you will have your own private cloud. That's clearly the easy path to entry. The next step would be really to plan your full installation. It's still the case that an installation that you do on two machines is not scalable to thousands of users, right? So to plan that, you clearly have to plan the network, the machines, how many cores you put, the memory. And that requires planning, but that's the usual planning that anybody needs to do for a big infrastructure. And after that, the installation of Eucalyptus is usually done fairly easy. A lot of people use it Puppet or Chef, for example, to deploy it on all the nodes. And nodes can be integrated and removed from a cloud without having to do, you know, at runtime at any time. So that's what I would say to get the steps to get right. started.
But you have to have at least two nodes running. And then if I had a third node, for example, then I could take one of the other nodes down, correct?
You can do that or you can keep adding it. So what we have as a structure, the reason why we suggest two nodes is that if you really, really are determined and you really, really understand networking, you can probably do it in one node. But the problem that we get out of it is just a bit too complicated. So we decided go for two nodes is really the easiest way to do it. The front end node is where you have the interface, where basically this API that we've been discussing before kind of resides. So all the client tool or all the our pattern tools or all the tools that work with AWS works against this API is going to be on the front end. And then we have what we call the node controller is the back end. And that's where is really the worker, where the instances are really running. And those, of course, will be more replicated. So we will have one front end where is the single entry point for the contact. Right. And then we have as many nodes as you want to have.
Right, right. Now, who else is using this? I mean, we talked about NASA a little bit, government. I mean, who else is using Eucalyptus that we might names that we might recognize that you can share?
Absolutely. Name that we have is Puma, Plinga. We just recently have the San Diego Supercomputer Center. I'm just looking at the website. Yeah, Plinga. There you go. Those are probably the most known one, I would say.
Right.
But we have about 25,000 starts of Eucalyptus, and so we have quite a big number of people using it.
So what counts as a start? Is that a node that comes on and registers, or is that cloud instances?
Yeah, so we don't keep track of the user at all. So we don't have any private data about anybody at this point. And we don't plan to change that policy. So we really let our user to do it. But what we do basically to make it easier for our user to get started with Eucalyptus, we provide what we call the starter images. They're images that if instead of you building your own operating system that would work on the cloud, you grab one of ours, it contains already the kernel, the RAM disk, and the root file system, and you can upload this into your own cloud and start it. We basically keep track about the people that grabs those images because they come straight from the web UI control for the cloud. And that basically allow us to understand the number of different people that started Eucalyptus because they had to go to the web UI to really get to those pages. So that's how we count them.
So you offer your own images. I mean, can I use my own Ubuntu image that I would use with Amazon? Can I use that directly?
Absolutely.
On? Okay. So I don't necessarily have to use the ones you provide. What's the advantage of the ones you provide?
That's correct. You can use your own one. Most of the time, what we discover is that because people that come and send up Eucalyptus, they come to us and ask for images, for getting those starter images, and that's why we provide them. We will provide, and we're in the process of renewing them to explain exactly what's in it and exactly what kind of scripts you can use to make your instance more cloud-friendly. There are a few things that you can do. There are technical things like query the metadata service to make basically the instance aware about their network surroundings, their security group, and those kind of things. And that typically is something that you don't have in a normal installation because you're not an instance, right? You just have a laptop or desktop or something like that. So we provide those images because people ask for us. But yeah, absolutely. What really they do those images is that they lower the barrier to entry. Once you have Eucalyptus running, you want to see if it works, and that's typically what you do. You get one of those images, you store them. And then what we discover is that people want to modify them and create them, and so we provide instructions to say, either you go from scratch, as you mentioned, you can go actually completely from scratch. You can get a CD of, say, Ubuntu, and you install it on your own VM, and then you move that into the cloud. That's a perfect way to do it. Usually, we discover that that can be error-prone. There are a lot of details about that, a lot of the networking. You have to be sure that you don't keep track of the MAC address and all those sorts of things. So what we tell people is that if you want to make it faster, just grab one of our images. They're very, very simple. They're very minimal, very basic. But what you can do, you can build on top of it very easily.
So it's basically an easier way to get started. If I heard correctly, it's basically instead of tailoring your own stuff, hey, look, use one of ours to get started, and then as you become more of an expert, you know more of what you're doing, then you know go into tailoring your own OS. But if you want to just get started right away and play with it, use these because they're already ready to go.
That's correct. That's exactly right. And in some sense, is this new role that we were talking about before, the cloud application architect, is really a new role that is really related to the fact that those images need to be managed, they need to be versioned, they need to have the application started, and there are very multiple different philosophy on how to get an application in the cloud. And so, you know, it's kind of a style. And until we have kind of a really de facto standards or best practices that have been coagulated among this system administrator, I would say, you know, we provide, this is again yet another way to do it. If you want to use the Amazon's images, please do. If you want to use our starter images and build on top of them, please do. It's just one of those things, yeah.
Okay. Another question I had is what other open source libraries are you using to make this work? I mean, you must be building this off of other libraries and things. Can you talk about what libraries you use behind the scenes so people kind of get an idea of what's involved?
Yeah. Actually, interesting enough, the number of library we use, because, I mean, really, we are where we are because we sit on top of giants, right? I mean, did somebody else said that? No, never mind, just joking. Is because, really, we are using all those wonderful libraries out there. I think we have about 150 dependencies, and that, in some sense, has been a barrier to entry on certain distribution. We want to be everywhere, but packaging them all to get into all distribution is somewhat of a daunting task at times. I guess that the most visible one that people understand very quickly is that we sit on top of libvirt, we sit on top of Xen and KVM. Those are the two typical open source hypervisor. We use VMware too, but those are library that comes from the dock in VMware. Yeah, I would say that those are the most visible because they're just right there is where the VM starts, and that's what we use straight away.
Right. Now, there was a question from the chat room also asking about libcloud. And can you compare, contrast that? I'm not familiar with libcloud, so I'm a little bit clueless here, but the IRC chat would like to know.
Got it. I think if I'm correct, and I'm being mistaken, so please monitor the chat and let me know if I'm off the topic here. Libcloud, I think, is basically uses the different API provided by the different cloud offering and trying to basically make it easier for the developer and the end user of tools to interact with those infrastructure. So in that sense, what libcloud, jcloud, and all those tools do, they basically interact against the AWS API and against Eucalyptus to operate the cloud for a user. So right now, for example, what we provide, let me backtrack a little bit and see if I can get this. What we provide basically is Eucalyptus is our infrastructure as a service, and we provide those command line tools that you can do all that you want. You can start volume, you can create volume, you can delete, you create snapshot, you can create instances, delete instances, you can create elastic IPs. All those basically virtual resources, you can manipulate them via the command line. As you may know, not everybody likes the command line or they want to perhaps have a bit more comprehensive tools. And so the libraries that the developer that builds those libraries, they did a great job about simplifying the interaction with the cloud. And I think libcloud does that. So to come back to the straight question about libcloud, if they're using AWS, they're probably working with Eucalyptus. So there is very little tweak that needs to be done. For example, Amazon has IP addresses for their entry point. Remember, we're talking about the entry point for the front end?
Right.
Amazon has that is a well-known IP address. In the case of the private clouds, that's well-known for the local installation, not for the library developer. So that needs to be customizable. That's one of the typical changes that needs to be done. So in some sense, I would say that libcloud, I'm not aware about how well it works at the moment, but it should probably work very well with Eucalyptus if it works with AWS.
Okay. Right.
Go ahead. Graziano, I'm kind of interested to understand what's the difference between what you have in your open project and the product that Eucalyptus, the company, sells?
Mm-hmm. So currently we have what we will have very soon is a plugin structure that is basically our Eucalyptus project, the one that you download from Ubuntu or whatever and you install it, is going to be basically the what you get also when you get a subscription from for the PIM for version. On top of that, we have plugins like the VMware hypervisor. So if you want to use, if you have a VMware installation and you want Eucalyptus to use this as an hypervisor, you will need to get the proprietary, the one we sell, basically.
All right. So it doesn't work with VMware out of the box?
That's correct.
Right. Okay. So you'd characterize the approach you're taking here that the community version of Eucalyptus is kind of the kind of code that someone experimenting would use, and anyone who wants to actually use it in business is going to then want to become a Eucalyptus customer.
We will love a lot of customers, of course, but what's going on is that if you're saying this because of VMware, we've seen a lot of people in production with all the three hypervisors, so we Eucalyptus strive to be hypervisor agnostic. It's kind of the beauty of this virtualization and the cloud computing is the fact that now suddenly Eucalyptus makes uniform across all the hypervisor you may have in your installation. So VMware is just one of them. So NKVM and Xen are they're the three that mainly we support. And so in that sense, however your system administrator are comfortable to deal with, this is really up to you. In some sense, we don't dictate what the end user has. Did I answer your question? Or
well, I'm really trying to get to the bottom of what the difference is between this and your commercial version. The reason I'm doing that is because for something to be open source, it has to be free to use for any purpose. And so I'm trying to get to the bottom of the degree to which the what's in the open project is usable by somebody to solve their own needs, and the degree to which they have to come to Eucalyptus, the company, to actually make it usable. So you're saying that if they want to use it with VMware, they need to buy a product from you. That's not entirely unreasonable because VMware is a commercial product too. If they want to deploy on Xen, do they have to buy anything from you?
No, not really. Just to finish it up, we have small differences and they're technical, but the two main differences between the pay for and the free product is basically the VMware integration and the Xen integration. We basically build integrator for the enterprise level Xen to work better for data, for Warros, that is the S3 basically implementation, and the EBS implementation, the storage controller. We have, as I mentioned to you before, we have customer actually that they are on open source and they have no need to move it to the proprietary version, and yet they're our customer and we support them and we help them into their Eucalyptus needs basically. So to answer your question, and actually we also have, of course, people that they come to us and they say, you know, we would really like to get something for you, but the open source is so great that, you know, we're happy as we are. So, hey, that's part of the game.
Right, right. And what would you say was the ratio in your community of people who are using purely open source code with they don't buy anything at all from Eucalyptus to people who are Eucalyptus customers who are paying you money? Is it kind of 90% open source and 10% customers, 10% open source and 90% customers? What kind of ratio is it?
Wonderful question. So I'm actually not in sales and marketing, so I don't have the real number. Given that, I would expect that because of the way open source works, the great majority of our users should be just open source, I think. And that's my expectation. But sadly, I don't have any number. I'm sorry.
That's okay. One more question just about to follow on with what you guys were talking about. I'm assuming that there is support that comes with the paid version, some sort of support model, correct?
Yes. Okay. Support actually comes with all versions of Eucalyptus. So even if you want support for the open source, we're more than happy to provide that too.
Oh, okay. So if I download all the open packages and so forth and I run into a problem, I can actually – can I call someone or email someone and say, look, I'm having this problem?
Yeah, you can. So the support model we're going to is subscription model. So basically you subscribe for the year and then you renew yearly so that we have a continuative interaction with the user, because it's really building the interaction. We're basically helping the customer to build an infrastructure and really require this kind of level of trust and continuous relationship to really get to the next level of the cloud computing, I think. And so I do believe that this is the right model to really get to the next big thing. So, the support, it works phone, email, ticketing system. If you're open source and you want to start, I mean, our forum is a great resource of information. So we have a lot of activity there, a lot of good answer, a lot of help there. IRC channels.
Okay. Yeah, good. And so how can people get started? Where's the best place to go if people want to learn more? I kind of know the answer to this, but go ahead.
Our website, I think, is the best handle, is open.eucalyptus.com. Just go there. There is a learn section that will give you the quick rundown about what's cloud computing, what is Eucalyptus, this is to orientate people so that they understand if cloud is for them or not. And then you move on and you can basically try Eucalyptus as a user. As I mentioned before, there is the community cloud. If you really want to see what Eucalyptus can do, you don't have to install it just to test that. Just go there. There's an API. It's exactly what you would get once you install it on your machine. And then if you say, I really, really like it, then by all means, next step is download the software and just get it going. And we give instructions and we have the packages over there to help you out.
Right. And I should say, too, I mean, if you go to openeucalyptus.com/learn, I that's kind of where I started. And it really is good. Like you say, there's descriptions of the various cloud models there, because cloud is such a amorphous term. I mean, it really, depending on who you're talking to, it means different things. So I really like the fact that you guys actually put some definitions down on paper. People can kind of take a look, see how it compares to other services at that URL, and then kind of dive in from there. So I've got to compliment you on that. And I should have started with this at the beginning, but I should say that you're not a newbie here. You've actually been working on this for quite a while. As I understand, I mean, you have a degree in this actually, and you've worked at universities, that says here, such as UC San Diego, UT Austin, San Diego Supercomputer Center, and you're at UC Santa Barbara now, correct?
Well, we're not anymore at Santa Barbara. I mean, right now we are working at the company, of course. But yeah, that was the pretty. Yeah, it's very interesting because Wojcicki, our CTO, is basically it would say the main leader here, and he carries so much experience. And of course, all of the team has been together for a long time, the core team. And we're all at academic level research. So I think that helps in some sense in understanding the landscape and try to understand where you want to go. And I think that the learn section, I think you can see the Rich's hands there, where the definition, the clear definition, are very important. Whenever you want to describe a problem, you have to frame it correctly. You have to understand, okay, these are the terms of the problem, and this is what we're trying to do. And that's kind of what, I guess, we kept that habits, you know.
Right. So usually at this point, I would ask for, you know, how you would ask people to get involved. But I think we've already covered that. It sounds like they should download, try it out, recommend things back. But we'll wait for the next version before actually that you would accept some large scale patch revisions and things like that. Correct?
Yeah. So the large patch, I mean, if people want to be involved, by all means, please get and talk to us. We are an RC. They can talk to me. My handle, both private messages or online IRC or email, is very visible. I'm more than happy to talk to everybody. I mean, I'm very excited. This is a cool thing. We can move it forward. So if you're interested into something, and actually, as a matter of fact, we have a lot of people interested, and they come a lot from the universities from all over the world. And they want to do projects with Eucalyptus. And we're trying to help them out and say, what we can do, basically, I can tell you where to work on so that your work is not going to be clobbered by our next release. So I can make sure that what you're doing is going to be really valuable work that can be integrated eventually. So in some sense, that's really the tack that I was trying to say before, is that don't pick the code, go in a dark room, and come back 6 months later with a great new edition, because it may be that we decided something different, or the code now suddenly moves so much that integrating that patch is going to be very difficult. So, but again, as I mentioned before, you know, get involved at every different level. If you want to involve with the code, talk to us, IRC, email, whatever you prefer. We really answer. Phone number, we have phone numbers too. If you want to use Eucalyptus, you get started, because the difference between 2 and 3 is just incremental. But what you learn on 2 as a user administrator will stay for you with you for 3.0. So get started on 2. If you have a problem, just talk to us. If you have suggestion and things, we are here to listen.
Okay, great. And Randall probably wouldn't let me host anymore if I didn't ask you one last question, which is Emacs or VI?
Of course, the answer is VI.
Hey, there we go.
I'm sorry, I'm an old schooler. What can I say? I tried to learn Emacs a few times. I just could not get around it.
Well, I'm a VI guy myself, so I appreciate that. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And hopefully people will go out and give Eucalyptus a try, or certainly at least learn more about it. I think this is one of the issues today that especially surrounding open source, where things get a little hairy. So it was really good to have you on. Great discussion. And we'll talk to you later.
Great. Thanks for having me. It was very nice talking to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Simon. So what do you think? Interesting project, interesting discussion about open source.
Yeah, it's an important market that we see coming on there for cloud computing. And I think that Eucalyptus has been able to get a lot of mind share. I remain a little concerned that the focus on software freedom isn't as strong as it could be. And I do think that will mean we'll see more focus on other projects by people who value their software freedoms. But I do think they're doing a fine job there of picking up the research project and turning it into a product. And I think we'll see a lot of people using it.
Right. I think so, too. And I think that really you see a lot of other projects like this where they have open source options available. Maybe not everything is open source. Some of it's open source. A lot of times what happens is people actually go off and use other projects. Or at the same time, I always like to try to encourage these companies, you know, at least they have an open source offering. At least they make that available. So it's a lot better than being completely closed source like some of the other folks are.
Absolutely. It's a step on a pathway. All the same, I would encourage them to define a governance that allows their community people to take a stake in their future and not assume that open source is all about getting free contributions.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up here. We've got some really, really good shows coming up in the future if you are a avid Floss Weekly listener. So I want to cover some of those. Coming up on October 5th, Dan Lynch will be back hosting, and we will have Francis Irving on talking about Scraper Wiki, which is kind of like an online tool to make finding information simpler, more collaborative. It's kind of interesting. It sounds a little bit like what Delicious is starting to do, which is kind of interesting. So it'll be interesting to hear what they have to say. And then on October 12th, I'll be back talking with, and I'm going to butcher this name, I apologize in advance, Julian Genisto, talking about Superfeeder. So you may be, you may know a little bit about Superfeeder, but it's basically an application that fetches and parses RSS feeds either for you or it pushes them. If you're a publisher, it helps you push them out and kind of parses that up and then brings the results back just that you want to see. So that should be pretty interesting discussion as well on October 12th. Then on October 19th, Randall, I believe, will be back from all of his cruising and traveling and gallivanting. And we will have Jonas. Again, I'm going to butcher this. I apologize. Leitinen, talking about Vaadin or Vaadin, V-A-A-D-I-N, which is a Java framework for building modern web applications that look great, perform well, and make you and your users happy. So we'll have to find out how happy they make people. That should be interesting. And then on October 26th, Randall again, we'll have Massimo Di Perio talking about Web2Py, an open source full stack Python web framework for scalable, secure, and portable web applications. Again, that one will be really interesting for portability. So take a look at that as well. So if you want to, some of the things that are coming up in my world, if you're in the area, especially if you're in San Francisco, I'll be at Oracle Open World on October 3rd. So this is just this next week, October 3rd through 6th. So if you want to meet me there, come down to where all the hardware is and all the Oracle hardware, I'll be down there roaming around. I'll also be at Open Android covering that conference, which is also here in San Francisco. And then on October 16th, I'll be at the East Bay Mini Maker Faire. As you know, if you watch the podcast that I put out, I've been doing more and more stuff about making and using open source and making projects and things. So I will be there covering that on October 16th. And you can still get tickets for that event. So please, if you are not aware of it and you want to attend, this is in Oakland. And it's a really, really great little Mini Maker Faire. Lots of stuff going on. So you can catch that as well. Simon, anything coming up for you where people can reach out and touch you or any events you're going to be attending?
Yes, I'm going to be going to Paris actually on October the 13th for the LibreOffice conference.
Ooh la la.
The LibreOffice conference. LibreOffice is 1 year old. It has a significant number of developers working to help it succeed. It's a brilliant piece of software now. Works well on Windows and Mac as well as on GNU Linux. And the conference is going to be running the 12th to the 15th with some excellent free parties with great food and drink. And there's some great speakers, including Glyn Moody, the journalist from the UK. And I'll be there for the whole of the LibreOffice conference. And then if anyone is down in Lyon in France, I'm speaking at the FOSSA conference, which is the 26th to the 28th of October. And I would love to see any of our French listeners down there. And then if you are in the San Francisco area and you know my personal email address, drop me a line and I would love to have a drink with you.
Great. Awesome. I'm kind of jealous. There's so many good open source conferences that happen in Europe that are just too far away for me to get to. So especially the LibreOffice one. That sounds great. They've been putting out a lot of good stuff very quickly. So it's really exciting. Where can people find you online? Where's the best place to follow you?
The very best place to find me online is on my personal blog. It's on webmink.com. It's down there on the banner. And I'm also writing on Computer World UK. I have a regular column on there. And I've started using Google Plus. There's been this incredible number of people who've suddenly showed up on Google Plus. I've now got about 3,000 people following me. Where they've come from and what they expect to happen, I don't know. But hi to all of you out there.
I've noticed that as well. Since Google Plus opened up to the general public, the people that have me in their circles, I guess that's the right way to describe it, has gone up incrementally. So that's probably the best way to get a hold of me as well, is on Google Plus. Just spell out my name, as you know you have to on Google Plus, and you'll find me. You can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter, though, if you'd prefer. I'm Aaron Newcomb on those services as well, and you can follow my check me out on my website, thesourceshow.org. I think we're almost out of plugs. One more, though, if you want to follow what happens on Floss Weekly, you can either go to Posturus and follow us there. There's a dedicated blog set up there. Or on Twitter, you can just follow Floss Weekly for everything that's coming up here on the show. So go check out the website as well, twit.tv.floss. And if you have a project that you'd like to see on the show, recommend that their project owner or lead developer get in contact with me or Randall or somebody on the show, and we'll try to get them on the calendar. All right, I think that wraps it up. Simon, so good to see you again. I it's been a while, and I really appreciated you having me on the show. We haven't co-hosted a show yet, so this has been great.
Yeah, I think the last time we actually did anything like this together was back in Sundays, back in the good old days when there was a Sun Microsystems, right? If you can remember back that far, Aaron.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, if you go back on my thesourceshow.org website, you'll see an interview that I did with Simon back, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, back in when we were both at Sun. So go check that out if you want to see a piece of history. But anyway, that'll wrap it up for today's edition of Floss Weekly. Catch us next week, and we'll see you later.